Hello, this is Brian Foster, and today I'm talking about Spiritism. Today is February 27th, 2022. And before I begin, let's have a prayer for what the conflict is going on now. Dear Jesus, please help everyone who is in the middle of a war situation. Please help us resolve all this as soon as possible so people are out of harm's way. Bless everyone on all sides. Help them see reason and have them know that violence is never the answer. Amen. Now, today I'm going to talk about the three different sections in the Spiritist Review of 1858, and that is astral projection, the spirit sensation of temperature, and paraspirit. Before I begin, if you'd like to learn more about Spiritism, I suggest you read what was codified by Allan Kardec. He's the one that edited this monthly magazine that I'm now talking about. It's in a book form now for 1858. He codified the Spirit's book. He wrote a series of 1,019 questions, and the answers are fascinating. He wrote those questions for different mediums to use in different geographical areas around France. And he did not codify those answers unless he had the same or similar answers. Very fascinating. In fact, if you'd like to get the book and get it free on PDF, just type in Allan Kardec space PDF. You'll find the Spirit's book and his other books. You can also listen to that book on my blog, nwspiritism.com, in MP3 or Audible format. Or you can also go to look at playlists on my YouTube channel, the channel you're watching now. Go to my YouTube channel, hit playlist, and look for the Spirit's book. Every chapter in the Spirit's book I will read in the playlist on my YouTube channel. The other thing you can do to help you understand Spiritism is to download my free PDF, Spiritism 101, and you can download that from nwspiritism.com. And that's also available at Kindle or paperback or in Audible format. Also, it's available in French, too. Okay, let's begin. This is the phenomenon of bicorporeity, which is astral projection. They use a lot of different words in, back in the 1850s when they wrote this. So let me start. One member of our society sent us a letter from one of his friends from Boulogne, Sir de Mer, dated July 26, 1856, in which one can read the following passage. After having magnetized my son following an order from spirits, like in hypnotic state, he became a very rare medium, this according to the revelation he gave in a somnolistic state, in a sleep state, which I've induced him into from his own request on May 14th last, and on other four or five occasions. There is no doubt to me that, when awake, my son freely speaks with spirits that he wishes to. Though his guide, who in the intimacy he calls his friends, he transports himself wherever he wishes to in spirit. I will report a case which I have written proof in my hands. So here's a case of astral projection from the 1850s. Exactly 1 month ago, we were both in the dining room. I was reading the course of magnetism given by Dr. Poté, when my son took the book from me, browsing over the pages. At a given point, he heard his guide saying, "Read that." It was the adventure of a doctor from America whose spirit has visited a friend who was 15 or 20 leagues away while asleep. After reading that, my son has said, "I wish I could do a similar journey." "Then where do you want to go?" asked his guide. "To London and see my friends," said my son. Then he named those who he wished to visit. "Tomorrow is Sunday. You don't need to get up early for work. You will sleep at 8 and you will enjoy London and up until 8:30. Next Friday, you will receive a letter from your friends complaining about your very short visit with them." That's what his guide said. In fact, on the following day in the morning, he fell into a deep sleep. I woke him up around 8:30. He remembered nothing. I said nothing to him, waiting for the events. The following Friday, I was working in one of my machines, smoking as usual, since I just had lunch. My son was observing the smoke coming out of the pipe when he said, "Look, there's a letter in the smoke." How do you see a letter in the smoke?" "You will see when the mailman is here." In fact, the mailman delivered a letter from London, which my son's friends complained about his such short a visit. of a few minutes on the previous Sunday from 8 to 8:30, describing a large number of details which would take too long to report here, among which there was a peculiar fact of him having breakfast with them. I read the letter in my hands, as I said before, as proof that I'm not creating things. So this is almost into a physical body. Once this tale was told, one of those attending the meeting said that history registers several similar cases. He mentioned St. Alphonse of Liguori, who was canonized before the required time, for having simultaneously appeared in two different places, fact that was then considered a miracle. And as Spiritism says, there is no such thing as a miracle. There's just things that you don't understand. So before we talk about that, so how can his son be asleep in a physical form where his father saw him? He woke him up at 8:30 in the morning on Sunday, and yet he went and visited his friends. And this is where if you had not been interested in Spiritism and did not consider that there's anything besides the physical universe, you would have said this is all just a delusion or a prank. That it is impossible that we are this physical entity. What is a wall is a wall, a body is a body, and you cannot go different places. So this is where Spiritism, and when you start getting into Spiritism, you start understanding what the true world that you live in. First of all, our physical universe is not that. The physical universe is a subset of the spirit universe. The spirit universe is a subjective universe where thought is action. You are an immortal spirit in the spirit universe. So what's the physical universe? Well, your spirit will go into penetrate your whole body. It can be connected to every cell of the body, and your paraspirit is connected to your spirit. So when you sleep, you can leave your body, your paraspirit, and go different places. Your paraspirit can show that it has a covering that they can have temporarily. Now, so what does that mean? Well, how can that happen? Well, this is the hard thing to get people around, because we think in geometric terms. We think of the earth, we think of heaven above the earth, we think of the lower zone, and we think of the dark abyss, or as you could call purgatory, below the crust of the earth. And we think of that because that's how our mind works. But in reality, we are a simulation. The earth is a simulation made for spirits to go, for them to be extremely vulnerable to stimuli that will affect their emotions, because that is our goal on earth, is to rip out our primitive emotions and replace those with civilized emotions. Take out hate and envy and replace that with love and charity and fraternity. Why can't you do that in the spirit world? Because in that you can, to a certain extent. It's not as efficient. But when you are in the what we call heaven, where the atmosphere is calm and cool, you're never sick, you're not stressed, you don't need a job to eat, right? You don't even need to eat, really. It's not as efficient place to rip out those smaller particles of primitive behavior. And I've talked before why we need primitive. Why do we have primitive behavior in the first place? Why didn't God make us all perfect? Because he wanted us, the spirit world wants to make us all unique. So we had to go through this long millennial path. So each of us has this unique set of characteristics, character, personality. So I would say it is possible. Jesus, in the Bible, you can read where Jesus came after he was dead, 3 days after he rose again from the dead. And when he showed up in the house in Jerusalem with all his apostles, that's a real person there. Or when he was walking on the road outside of Jerusalem and people met him, that's a real person there. Because Jesus is in control of the simulation called Earth. And he's the administrator of the game. He can do what he wants to. He can change the parameters by his mind. And so this, especially for me, look at when I was a concrete thinker as a young kid. Most kids are, but even then, going into young adulthood, I was never spiritual. I believed in God, but far away. I was not a spiritual person until I was told a year in advance of certain things that would happen. That happened with complete specificity. Now, I would have said before that, if someone told me that would happen, I would have said that is impossible. And what was told to me was not like, oh, you know, you're going to have an accident or you're going to meet someone or no. This was like, you're going to work for a company. I'll tell you what it is. You're going to work for a company that goes broke, but don't worry. You get rehired by the same bank, but with a different name. I worked for Washington Mutual. They were the only bank that was closed by the FDIC, completely bankrupt, destroyed everything, fired us all. And I thought, okay, this was the 2008, you know, bad recession, the Great Recession. I thought, I'm not in good shape. I have a family to feed, a house payment. I've been unemployed in the worst time ever. But it took a while. But it was like only 3 months or so. I was rehired as a contractor, and then eventually I became full-time employee by the same bank, but with a different name. And this was told to me a year before this happened. And my wife told me this, and this was told to her when she was around 17, which was about 12 years before we met, that she had like this near-death experience and saw her life. And then she remembered being told this before the event. So that got me thinking, okay, there's something weird here. I didn't believe in predetermination before, predestination, but I guess there is. This is how I discovered spiritism. And I think the spirit world wanted me to discover spiritism. There's many wonderful spiritists who are loving and kind and just the nicest people ever. And they've always, even as a child and young adult, they've displayed this wonderfulness, this empathy. That was never me. I've always been, okay, let's get it done. You know, that's why when I was in project management, I was like, oh, let's move, let's get it done. And I, you know, ran over other people's feelings. I you could never describe me as being empathetic or spiritual when I was younger. That was not there. So I think that it was like, okay, well, let's get this dummy, and we'll show the world that even someone as surface and materialistic as this guy can believe in spiritism, other people can. And so for me, it had to be an event that I could not rationalize away. And I had been told other things during my marriage of when things would happen, but I always said, nah, that's, you know, coincidence. And I always rationalized it away. This one I could not. This one was too specific. And in fact, when she told me this a year before, I actually bought more stock in the bank because I thought, oh, that's what she said is ridiculous. Our management says we're going to be in good shape. Of course, you know what happened. I lost all my money. So not only did I lose my job, I lost all the money. I can laugh at it now. It was, and of course, now later on, I know why. I was destined to do that too, because I've been told in past lives I've been a person in charge of, I don't know what, but in charge of people in some sort of capacity, and I took money instead of helping the people. I took money, so now I'm not allowed to have much money at all. But the spirit world let me live a middle class existence, so who am I to complain? Okay, so that's why I'm saying a lot of things can happen. You know, don't center yourself into this physical universe. It's like the old days when you know, oh, the Earth is the center of the universe, and then, you know, when they said no, we revolve around the sun, and then, you know, oh, let's kill that guy that says that. No, we're not the center of the universe. And we even think physically we're on the solar system, that there's no other life around us. No, there's life all around us. It's spirit life. You can't see it. You can't feel it. Some people can. people that very talented, but their life isn't easy. Don't envy mediums. Their life is not easy, especially ones that can see spirits. It's not an easy talent. I've met quite a few of them. It's not an easy talent to have. It takes a lot of sacrifice. Okay, let me carry on. And I talked about St. Alphonse de Liguori. Okay, so St. Anthony of Padua was in Spain while giving his sermon. His father was about to be executed in Padua, accused of murder. At that very moment, Anthony shows up, demonstrates his father's innocence, and reveals who the true assassin was, who later suffered the penalties. It was verified that St. Anthony was preaching in Spain at the same time. St. Alphonse of Liguori was evoked so that we addressed him with the following question. Number one, the fact that justified your canonization, is that real? And the answer is yes. Is that phenomenon exceptional? No, it can happen to every individual who is dematerialized, meaning you're away from your physical body. Was it a fair reason for having you canonized? And the answer is yes, since I'd elevated myself to God through my virtues. Without that, I could not have been simultaneously transported to two different places. Should then every individual capable of such phenomenon be canonized? The answer is no. Not all are equally virtuous. Could you give us an explanation about the phenomenon? So let's see what he says. Yes. When a man is completely dematerialized by his own virtue, when he has elevated his soul to God, he can simultaneously appear in two places as below. Once he starts to feel sleepy, the incarnated spirit can ask God to take him to a given place. His spirit or his soul, however you want to call it, leaves the body, followed by the part of the paraspirit, leaving the dense matter in a state that is close to death. I say close to death because the link that connects the paraspirit to the soul and the soul of the body remains in the body, and the link cannot be defined or destroyed. I think it's probably wrong. The body then appears in the desired place. I believe this is all you wish to know. That does not explain the visibility and tangibility of the paraspirit. So let me bring up, being detached from matter, according to his degree of elevation, the spirit can produce tangible matter. So let's show this description of the paraspirit. So here's the body, which you see for those who are listening. I am going over a slide which shows the human physical body and then the paraspirit next to the physical body, which is kind of an ethereal body made up of energy. That it covers the body when you're awake. And then there's the spirit, which lives in the spirit world. Now, the paraspirit is always connected to your body, even when your paraspirit leaves, by a thin silver cord. And that cord's been talked about even in the Bible, and it's been talked about by people with NDEs. It was amazing. I saw this one movie, which I was, I don't know how many people know the actress Shirley MacLaine. I always thought, well, before I knew spiritism, I thought, oh, she's kind of strange. She talked about spirits and all that. And one movie I saw later on when I was a spiritist, she described looking back as she's leaving her body, described saying, oh, there's a silver cord behind me. So yes, she's right. That is a silver cord that connects your paraspirit. So I stand corrected. God bless you, Miss MacLaine. You know what you're talking about. So the paraspirit leaves the body, astral projects to, London, wherever you want to go, Disneyland. You can then grab matter, if you have the power to do so, through universal fluid and use that matter. After all, we're a logical, since we're a simulation, we're a piece of intelligence within a logical complex database. We can then query and ask for an appearance of matter around our body and appear as solid as ever. That's how that happens. That is a hard concept. And it's so foreign. It is completely foreign to what we're talking about, is it not? Okay, let me carry on. Number seven. Nevertheless, the tangible apparitions of hands and other parts of the body evidently come from inferior spirits. The inferior spirits serve the superior ones who wish to demonstrate the fact. Number eight, is the sleeping body a requirement so the spirit may appear in other places? The answer is the soul may divide itself when feeling transported to a place different from where that, from that where its body is located. What would happen to a man deeply asleep whose spirit would appear somewhere else if that person were suddenly awakened? The answer is that would not happen, since if someone had the intention of waking him up, the spirit would foresee the intention and would return to the body, considering that the spirit reads the thoughts. And he said, it goes on, a similar fact is reported by Tacitus. Now, Tacitus was a Roman historian, and Vespasian was a, I don't know if at this point in time, but it was a Roman emperor whose son was Titus, and he was the one that actually destroyed the temple. That was and Vespasian too, but the generals that really during the Jewish rebellion and when they scattered the Jewish state, you know, all throughout Roman Empire. During the month that Vespasian, I'm reading, spent in Alexandria, Egypt, waiting for the seasonal return of the dry winds and the time when the sea becomes favorable, several prodigies took place, through which the favor of heaven and interest of that the gods seemed to have for that prince manifested. Such prodigies reinforced Vespasian's wishes to visit the sacred dwelling of the god, to consult with him about the issues of the empire. He commanded that the temple be closed to everyone. Having entered the temple's mind totally concentrated on what the oracle would say, he noticed one of the main Egyptians behind him, a man by the name of Basilide, who he knew had been sick for several days in Alexandria. He inquired the priest if Basilide had come to the temple that day. He asked around to passers-by whether they had seen him in town. He finally sent men on horseback to find and certify that he was 80 miles away at the very moment. Then he no longer doubted that his vision was supernatural and that Basilide had taken the oracle's place. So then Allan Kardec wrote, since that fact had been communicated to us, we have received several others of the same kind from reliable sources. Among them are some very recent ones that have occurred, say, in our environment, taking place in very interesting circumstances. Their explanations allow for a significant broadening of the psychological observations. The subject of the double men, left to the fantastic stories of the past, thus seems to have some truth in it. We shall return to this subject soon. Now, I've not heard anything in our modern times of this occurring. So we shall see. Maybe it has occurred and no one's talked about it. I do not know. Okay, let's do our next subject. Spirits' sensations. And this one is about how spirits sense and what do they feel. So let's read. Do the spirits suffer? What sensations do they expect? Now, before I begin this, I'd like to say is that spirits have acuteness of senses that are just beyond. They can hear better, they can smell better, they can see better. They don't see with physical eyes, right? They don't hear with physical ears, they don't smell with a physical nose, but they have this enormous capacity for this. They see a broad spectrum of colors. In fact, even people with NDE say they've been to heaven and they say, I saw colors I cannot describe. In fact, one person had a out-of-body experience. He went to this library in the spirit world. He was sitting in this wooden chair. He was in the middle of the library, and there was like wooden columns around him. And he had his chair slightly askew to the desk, and it was also askew to the wooden column on the other side of the table. And when he moved his chair out, right, as you do, the wood squeaks. So when the sound came back, he could tell the entry of the sound to his ear and the time difference between his left ear and his right ear. The ear that was cocked towards the column, he could hear it first, and then one a little bit further away, he'd hear it secondly. And then, of course, when people see as long as they want in the detail. But then things start fading out. So let me carry on. Which sensations do they experience? Such questions are naturally addressed to us, and we try to answer them. Initially, we must say that we do not limit ourselves to the answers of the spirits. We had somehow to consider the sensation as a fact through observations. In one of our sessions, soon after having received a beautiful essay from St. Louis regarding greed, published last February, one of our associates described the following fact with respect to that dissertation. We were evoking spirits in a small group of friends when suddenly, without being called, a spirit that we had known very well presented himself. He could have served as a model to the picture of the greedy one painted by St. Louis. One of those men that live miserably, surrounded by their fortunes, deprived of everything, not to the benefit of others, but just to accumulate more uselessly. It was winter and we were by the fireplace. Then that spirit brought his name back to us, name that was far from our thoughts, requesting our permission to come to warm up by our fireplace for 3 days, saying that he felt a horrible cold that he voluntarily endured during his life, and that he forced others to withstand out of greed. This would be a relief, he added, if you allow me to. That spirit was experiencing a painful sensation of cold. But how could that be? That was a difficulty. We then directed the following question to St. Louis. Number one, could you kindly tell us how the spirit of that greedy man who no longer had a material body felt cold and asked for help to warm him up? And the answer is, you can imagine the sufferings of the spirits by their moral sufferings. Number two, we understand the moral suffering like sorrow, remorse, shame, but heat and cold and the physical pain, these are not moral effects. Do spirits experience that kind of sensation? And the answer is, does your soul feel cold? No, but it is aware of the sensation that it causes in the body. So what he's saying is that in that spirit's mind, he feels cold because he made others feel cold. He's not really cold. Just like when spirits who were sick or had a disability, many times you'll still feel that they are sick, they still feel bad, or they still have that disability when they go over to the spirit world. There's a prime example of that, of the spirit Camilo Blanco, who was blind when he committed suicide. And he thought, well, I'm blind. But then, like, all of a sudden, he could start seeing. He goes, how can I see if I'm blind? He thought he was blind, but as a spirit, then he finally got the point that, yeah, I know I'm not blind, right? So that's, you know, spirits, you know, thought is action. And if you think you feel cold, you feel cold. So number three, as a consequence, it seems that the spirit of the greedy did not feel real cold, but he had the memory of the sensation caused by the cold he had endured. And for him, that memory that for him was like reality was torture. The answer is, it was more or less that. Let's be very clear. There's a distinction between the moral and physical pain. One should not confuse the effect without the cause. Number four, if we got it right, one could explain things like this. The body is the instrument of pain. If it is not the first cause, it is at least the immediate cause. The soul has the perception of that pain. That perception is the effect. The memory retained by the soul can be as painful as reality, but it cannot have a physical action. Neither intense heat nor cold can disorganize its constitution. The soul cannot feel heat or cold. Don't we daily see the memory or apprehensions of a physical illness producing the actual effect of reality, even causing death? Everyone knows that amputees feel pain in the non-existent limb. That limb is certainly not the center or even the origin of the pain. The brain has kept the impression, and that is all. One can thus believe that there is something analogous with the suffering of the spirits after death. Are such considerations correct? The answer is yes. Later, you'll understand even better. Wait for other facts that provide you with new points of observation. You will then be able to arrive at the comprehensive conclusions. Now, this was at the beginning of 1858, and as a matter of fact, since then a more in-depth study of the paraspirit that represents a more important role in all spiritist manifestations, and that was still unnoticed, has taken place. The vaporous or tangible apparitions, the state of the spirit at the time of the death, so the so frequent idea that in the spirits they're still alive, the impressive portrait of the suicidal, of the executed, of those embedded in the material pleasures, and so many other facts that brought light into this question and paved the way for the explanations that we summarize below. Let's see what they say. See if I agree with it. The paraspirit is the link that unites, let me see where we are here. Yep. That unites the spirit to the material body. It is taken from the environment, from the universal fluid. It simultaneously has something of electricity, which is energy, of the magnetic fluid, and up to a certain extent of the inert matter. Yes, as a spirit with the paraspirit, you are have a ratio of energy to matter. As you go higher and higher, your ratio of energy to matter also becomes higher. One could say that it is the quintessence of matter. It is the principle of the organic life, but not of the intellectual life. The intellectual life resides in the spirit. Besides, the perispirit is the agent to the exterior sensations. I agree with all this so far. In the body, these sensations are localized in the organs that operate as channels, as sensories. Once the body is destroyed, the sensations become generic. That is why the spirits who do not say they have more pain in their head than in their feet. Furthermore, it is necessary not to confuse the sensations of the paraspirits, which became independent, with those of the body. The last ones have to be taken only comparatively and not as an analogy. Any excess of heat or cold may disorganize the very fabric of the body. However, it cannot reach the paraspirit. Once detached from the body, the spirit can suffer, but such suffering is not of the body. Yes, suffering is of your conscience, of your morality, of what you've done wrong. And that's why there's such suffering in the lower zone in the dark abyss. And that's why there's suffering when someone tries to rise out of the dark abyss and the lower zone. It's because their memories come back and hit them even harder. It's a hard trip to go from those lower zones up to heaven, because you have to like burn away your guilt. And of course, that's why in your next life, you want to pay back for those wrongdoings, because you need to get rid of that. You need, because for, you know, everyone says, yes, God and Jesus forgives us. Yes, they forgive us and they love us. But we have to pay for what we've done for us to forgive us. And once we forgive ourselves, after we have deliberately paid for that wrong, then we feel the forgiveness of God and Jesus. We always feel it, but now we actually like internalize it. Nevertheless, it is not exclusively moral suffering like remorse, since the spirits complain about heat or cold. The spirits does not suffer more in the winter than in the summer. We have seen them going through the flames without any suffering. Thus, temperature cannot exert any impression on them. As a consequence, the pain they feel is not properly physical. It is a vague, intimate feeling that the spirit himself is not always precisely aware of, since the pain is not localized, is not produced by any external agent. It is more of a memory than a reality. Although it can be a painful memory, there is, however, something else besides the memory, as we will see below. Experience teaches us that at the time of death, the paraspirit detaches more or less slowly. At first, the spirit is not aware of the situation, does not consider himself dead, feels alive, sees the body by the side, acknowledges his own body, but does not understand how it can be separated. It happens lots. Such a state lasts for as long as there is a bond between the body and the spirit. Take the avocation of the person who committed suicide in the Samaritan bath described in our June issue. He said, I'm not dead, but he added, however, I feel the worms devouring me. Well, the worms cannot absolutely devour the paraspirit, let alone the spirit. They only destroy the body. As the separation between the body and the paraspirit was not complete, the result was a kind of moral repercussion that gave them the sensation of what was happening to the body. Repercussion may not be the correct word, since it could lead to the supposition of a very material effect. It was, on the contrary, the vision of what was happening to his body, to which his paraspirit was attached, that produced the illusion taken by reality. Thus, it was not a memory, as he was not devoured by worms while alive. It was an actual feeling. So, there's another good illustration of this fact of when you're a spirit and thinking that something's going to happen to you makes it happen to you. There are descriptions of battles down in the lower zone in the dark abyss, battles between two groups of spirits. And if one group of spirit has been in the lower zone, let's say for 1,000 years, and there was never any gunpowder, and another group of spirit aims a gun at this guy and shoots him, he'll go, oh, that's not going to hurt me. And it doesn't hurt him. But if someone else in that group was from the more modern age, during the age of gunpowder, and he sees someone shoot him, and someone shoots him, he like recoils in horror, and he drops down on the ground, not dead, but thinking he was shot, and he'll recover after a bit. Same thing with like an arrow, right? They'll shoot an arrow, and they're like, oh, there's an arrow in me. The arrow really doesn't do anything. In fact, there was this great story by the Reverend G. Vowell, well, not story, but it was psychographed from different spirits about the spirit Paul and Alan. Paul and something. I just can't remember. Anyway, so the spirit goes and he is being tortured. And he was a doctor. He treated other people not very well. And they was torturing him. They were actually cutting his skin and taking out organs. And of course, he didn't see any blood, which was strange. And they took his organs. Then he woke up in a cave with the organs around. He kind of fainted again. And then he woke up and he was whole again because his body, in his mind, thought he was whole. So it's what you think that's happening to you. So when there's a battle going on and someone hits you with a club, you think the club is hurting you and therefore you are hurt. Another one in the Reverend Zeeval, this lower spirit was climbing up and he lost his footing and he tumbled down a cliff and he was at the bottom of the cliff, kind of knocked out. Well, as the higher spirit said, look, really nothing happened to him. He just thought he'd be knocked out by falling down the cliff. And he will wake up pretty soon. So I said, he's fine. So that it shows you the fact that in the subjective world, what you think is what's happening. Okay. I think enough. I have to enough to say about that. Let me get to the next one, which is page 2 of the paraspirit. Okay. So we're talking about paraspirit. I'll keep going on this one then. Okay, from that we see the deductions that can be taken from the facts when observed with attention. During life, the body receives exterior impressions transmitted to the spirit through the paraspirit that probably constitute what is called nervous fluid. Once dead, the body no longer feels, as there is neither spirit nor paraspirit. Now, and so the paraspirit is connected to every cell in your body. So it, and within there's four centers, right? The crown force center and the spleen force center, on and on and on. And through millennial of reincarnations from primitive organisms to where you are now in this free will, your paraspirit learns to control this physical body better and better within this simulator. And therefore, all your sensations get transmitted up through your spirit, which records everything. Okay. Now, as in reality, since there's only one transmitting agent, since the spirit, it is the spirit that has consciousness, it results that if there could be a paraspirit without a spirit, it would not feel more than the dead body. In the same way, if a spirit had no paraspirit, it would be inaccessible to any painful sensation, right? Because it's sending those sensations up through that cord to the spirit. This is what happens to spirits who are completely depurated, dead. We know that the more they depurate, they decompose, the more ethereal the essence of the paraspirit becomes. From what follows, the influence of matter diminishes with the progress of the spirit. That is, as the paraspirit becomes less materialized. One would say, however, that the pleasant sensations are transmitted to the spirit through the paraspirit, as well as the unpleasant ones. Thus, if the pure spirit is inaccessible to some, he must be equally to the others as well. Yes, no doubt, to those that uniquely come from the influence of the matter that we know. The sound of our instruments, the perfume of our flower, causes no impressions on them. However, there are intimate sensations of an undefinable enchantment that we cannot have any idea about as, for that matter, we are like being born blind with respect to light. We know that it exists, but through which media? Our knowledge stops there. We know that there is perception, sensation, hearing, and vision, and that such faculties are attributes of the whole being and not, like with man, of a given part of the body. And yes, that is exactly true. And so what he's talking about is, okay, a spirit who will, let me put down a picture here. Whoop, let me get back here. Hide. So a spirit has no definite organs to hear, or taste, or smell, or see. So how does that happen? So that's where that is an attribute of how to interpret the data around you. Let me explain this with an analogy. Take a cell phone, right? You have the minimum apps on that cell phone. You don't even have a camera. But then let's say, You might have let's say you download an app that says, okay, let's turn on the camera. You can take movies. You can see now. You can now, with that application on the cell phone, remember, you're your spirit is an encapsulated piece of logic. It holds your personality, your character. That doesn't mean you're a robot. It doesn't mean you're unfeeling. This is so sophisticated that you are this feeling human, that what you think of human, that's what you are as a spirit too. You're smarter though. But on that cell phone, you now have a capability to see. Well, you also, and then you add another app. You have can have the capability by maybe plugging little sensor, and you have the capability to smell. And then on the cell phone, you also have the capability to speak through the speakers on that cell phone. They're all different. They're all different channels of interfaces, right? Interfacing with the outside world. And we are this logical currents that can interface with all the data around us. So if you're in heaven and you're walking along a street and you're seeing other people and you're waving, you're actually, you're seeing that and you're believing you're in heaven, because that is what, how your body is interpreting the data that is all around you. It's like putting on your virtual reality glasses and you're walking down a street, right? And if you, and you, instead of that street that shows up on your glasses, they could just show you the data and the parameters that are whizzing by, and you would see nothing but the data, right? Another thing you could use, like the movie Matrix, where he sees data, but then sometimes he sees the physical representation of what that data is intended to show. That is how this works. And I know this is not an easy concept. Oh, let me carry on. So the spirits themselves cannot enlighten us with that respect, because our language is not capable of expressing ideas that we do not have, as blind people would not have words to describe the effects of light, or the language of the savage would not have the means of describing our art, sciences, and our philosophical doctrines. So this shows you another example of how spiritism says that they can only talk to people in their level of culture and technology at the time. If they tried to tell Allan Kardec, saying, well, it's kind of like being a cell phone, or it's kind of like looking at a data structure, they go, what? What are you talking about? That makes no sense. But now we can start seeing how this makes sense, right? So that's very important for us. This shows you why, as spirits say, the Bible is a wonderful thing, and the messages of love and charity and fraternity are eternal. But the other stuff in there, they're kind of geared toward the level of the people they talked to at the time. And some things they said in the Bible and other religious writings seem pretty primitive and pretty mean to us, but that's how they could communicate. If they were too elevated, they would have said, oh, this is ridiculous, and throwing that piece of paper away, or whatever it was, piece of stone, right? Parchment. So that's, you know, they can only talk to us on what we can understand. So I'll carry on. When we say that the spirits are inaccessible to the impressions of our matter, we refer to the very elevated spirits whose ethereal covering has no analogy here on earth. The same does not apply to those whose pair of spirit is denser. Those perceive our sounds, odors, but not through a limited part of their beings as when alive. One could say that the molecular vibrations are felt in their whole self. So this is, again, I think I'll stop there, because I think we've explained that enough and for people to understand that. So I hope that helps open up what the spirit world is. This is where going through and talking about these things, and hopefully giving everyone different methods to view in their own mind, to understand the spirit world, because it's a hard concept to think that, you know, this isn't real. This is, our perception is real, right? A wall is a wall, right? The earth is earth, the sky is a sky. But we are in this very complex simulator. And some actually from very deep thinkers saying that, yeah, are we in a simulation? Because there's a lot of stuff that they've learned about the physical world that go, how does this add up? And the answer is it doesn't, right? So, but this is how spiritism works, right? I am telling you these things for you to pick up and decide for yourself. If you don't believe it, there's no problem with that. It just lets you, you know, you'll learn at some point in time. There's no irretrievable being lost. There's no eternal hell. None of that happens. It just slows down your progress. And that's what I'm just saying is, I think the more you can learn, that's why, if you want an explanation of the spirit world, I recommend you read my book, The Spirit Realm, Spiritism Revealed, the Reality of Our Existence. And that will help give you a better concept of what the spirit realm is, what the physical realm, why you're on earth, right? You're on earth to learn, become a pure spirit. There's a very good reason. You know, when you think in the spirit world, the thought is action, and you can manipulate dynamically all this data you're swimming through, that's a huge power. And they're not going to let someone who's uncivilized, like a little kid, it's like letting a 10-year-old drive a car. You're not going to do that. They're not going to let us hire in the physical, in the spirit world, when we don't have the mental discipline. And that's why we're on earth, is to create that mental discipline. Okay. Anyway, I want to say thank you for everyone who's been with you tonight. Remember, we're live streaming again on Monday and Tuesday nights. God bless.